Well, thank you. It's great to be back. So wonderful to see so many of you. I hope everybody's been well. And as I mentioned, we had a fabulous teen trip. Really, really wonderful. And we already started planning for next year because you got to
Oh,
strike
yeah.
while the iron's hot and all the kids are excited. And so we're keep moving forward.
Yeah.
All right. But we are up to, I want to spend some time on a really important topic. And it relates to last week's Torah portion. Last week we read the last in the book of Bereshit, the parsha is known as Vayechi, and it's really the end of Jacob, our patriarch Yaakov's life, and some very interesting themes that come about. And the truth is, we can spend all night just talking about so many different themes. I've the last 6 months to a year. When I work on a topic that I want to share, so I have my sources and I flesh out a lot of it, and then my curiosity gets the best of me, and I put it into ChatGPT and see what they can come up with. So
Oh,
I said, okay, give me 10 themes that run through the Parshas Vayechi, and it did. It was great. None of them were my topic.
yeah.
So of course I'm not going to be outdone. I said, okay, that's great. Give me five more. Found five more topics. One of them we touched on ours. So we're still 14 steps ahead of ChatGPT. So we're good. Job security is still okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the perhaps the most famous sections or stories in this Parsha is where Jacob calls Joseph, his son Yosef is now, he's already become the second in command of all of Egypt. Only the throne of Pharaoh is above him. And he's brought down his whole family to Goshen. And it's been 17 years that the family has been down there. And now Yaakov again is towards the end of his life. I don't know, call it weeks, months, it's not years. And he calls and he tells Yosef, I want to give you a blessing. I want to give you a bracha. Okay. And he says, what I want you to do is I want you to bring your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, bring them to me so that I can give them a blessing. Right? We know the story that Yosef arranges the older son, Manasseh, to be to Yaakov's right hand. And he puts Ephraim by Yaakov's left hand because he assumes, I think a fair assumption, the right hand always represents priority, strength. So you put that towards the older one, the Bechor, the firstborn, and the left goes towards the younger one. And Yaakov goes ahead and he switches his hands and he puts his right hand on Ephraim and his left hand on Manasseh. Yosef tries to stop him and Yaakov says, I know. Yadati b'ni. I know who's who. The older one is also going to be great. However, it's Ephraim and his progeny that are going to take center stage in Jewish history, which is in fact what happened. The person who succeeded Moshe as leader of the Jewish people, his name was Joshua, is a direct descendant from Ephraim, not Manasseh. Ephraim's great, 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 whatever grandson, Yehoshua, is the one who leads the conquest into the land of Israel. Okay. And there's a lot of discussion exactly the deeper meaning behind it. But what I would like to do is to focus on a strange phenomenon. People talk about the challenges of what's known as the generation gap. Every generation faces the challenge of connecting with the next generation just by the mere fact that we're older, so things change. The challenge of all the new scientific discoveries that the younger generation experiences, the enormous social change that inevitably happens every generation, technology, communication. Even just a totally different set of social, economic values, it just changes. That's a reality. How do we relate to these younger, to the younger generation? And similarly, how does the younger generation relate to us? It's known as the generation gap. It's not, it's again, it's not a new phenomenon, but it's a reality and it's a challenge. What is the Torah perspective regarding the generation gap? How do we do it? We obviously, the most important thing we do is make sure that the next generation remains committed Jews to continue this important chain of tradition. We know that. That's like, ask anybody, they know that that's a number one. So to really understand the Torah perspective on this and how it's going to relate back to our story is an interesting question that Rav Soloveitchik was a tremendous leader. He ultimately became the head of Yeshiva University in New York City is on the Upper West Side. It's an amazing institution. He was the Rosh HaYeshiva. He was the dean. Tremendous, tremendous Torah scholarship. Really, one of a handful of deep thinkers and an articulate speaker. He makes a very interesting observation. We call ourselves, as the Jewish people, we of the three patriarchs, we associate ourselves mostly with Jacob. We call ourselves B'nai Yisrael, the children of Israel. And Israel doesn't mean the country, it means the person, Yisrael. That is Jacob's other name. Everything that we refer to ourselves as Klal Yisrael, or even our land, it's Eretz Yisrael. Why is it called Israel? Because it's named for the patriarch. But folks, he was not the first. Avraham came before him, Yitzchak came before him. Why do we associate ourselves specifically with Yaakov? Wouldn't it make more sense to start with the originator and call ourselves B'nai Avraham? He's the one who really, if you ask most people, they and rightfully so, they'd say he was the founder of the Jewish people. In fact, the Torah itself calls him when his name is changed from Avram to Avraham. It says because Av Hamon Goyim. He is the father of a multitude of nations. That's us. He is father number one. So why yet we refer to ourselves as B'nai Yisrael? Additionally, he points out that throughout Judaic literature, Yaakov or Yisrael has a unique title. He's often called, how do you say grandfather in Hebrew?
After.
Sa, that's grandmother.
No.
Saba. Saba is grandfather. Savta is grandmother. Interestingly enough, throughout Judaic literature, and I'll show you in a moment, even in the Torah, Yaakov is known as Yisrael Saba, Zaidi Yisrael. No other, we don't say Yitzchak Saba, Zaidi Yitzchak, or even Avraham Saba. We don't refer, it's only Yaakov. Yisrael is called Yisrael Saba, our Zaidi, our grandfather Yaakov. Even in the Torah, when the brothers are talking, let me make sure I get the right verse here. We had just a couple of weeks ago when Yehuda is talking to his father. Gimel Chavsayin. Okay, Yosef. Sees, I'm sorry, Yosef sees his brother Benjamin that was finally brought down to Egypt, and he decides he's going to test his brother's sincerity. So he says to them, when Joseph came to the house, they brought the tribute that was in their hands to him to the house, and they prostrated themselves to him toward the ground. He inquired after the welfare, and he said, Vayomer, Yosef says to the brothers, Hashalom avichem hazakein, asher amartem ha'odenu chai. Is your aged father, the zakein, In Hebrew, zaken means the old man. Zaken and zikena, old man, old woman. He's given a title, not just because he's elderly. In fact, he wasn't even so old at this point. Yet Yosef refers to him again in a term that represents an older generation. Why didn't he just ask, is your father still well? Why did he say your older father? So again, this is something Rav Soloveitchik points out, and he says it's even stranger knowing that of the three patriarchs, Jacob lived the shortest. Yitzchak lived 180, Avram lived 175, and Yaakov only lived 147. I say only in quotes, obviously, right? Right? But of all the patriarchs to call the older generation, he wasn't it. So why? So Rav Soloveitchik tells us a tremendous principle. Yaakov was the first patriarch who had a direct relationship with his grandchildren. Listen to that point. Yeah, Avraham had grandchildren, Yitzchak had grandchildren, and probably met them, probably interacted to some degree, but there is no recorded conversation, no recorded section in the Torah that shows direct communication and relationship of grandparent to grandchild until our story of Yaakov having direct relationship with Ephraim and Manasseh, Yosef's two sons. He says, what Yaakov did by having that relationship with his grandchildren, he conquered time and space by elevating. Because what happens? What does Yaakov do when he blesses Ephraim and Manasseh? What does he treat them as? Anybody?
As his sons, as part of the
That's
children,
correct.
you bring
He
that up.
elevates them not to the level of grandchildren, but actually to the level of children. What do I mean by that? Yaakov says that your two sons, Yosef, Ephraim and Manasseh, I'm going to treat as if they were my own children, and they will receive a portion in the land of Israel, like Reuven and Shimon and Yehuda and Gad and Asher and all. They are elevated from the status of grandchildren to the status of children. First time in history that the Torah records this kind of close-knit relationship between grandparents and grandchildren. The other patriarchs had some relationship. They lived at the same time, I have to assume. But the Torah doesn't emphasize it because it must have been somewhat indirect. Avraham gave over the tradition and the Mesorah to Yitzchak. That was his job. Did he meet Yitzchak's children? Yeah. But Avraham didn't give over the traditions directly to Yaakov and Esav. Yitzchak gave it to Yaakov. But Yaakov didn't only give it to his 12 sons. He made a point of interacting and giving over the tradition to his grandchildren. Very, very astute observation that Yaakov was able to bring together, to close the gap between older generations and younger generations through the interaction. And we'll see what that really means. If you paid attention in the Parsha, you notice that this blessing that Yaakov gives to his grandchildren is even before he calls his own children to give them their blessings before he dies. The ordering is he first makes sure that his grandchildren get the blessing and have that continuation of the tradition. Then he confirms that his children have it. It goes even further. How does he give the blessing to them? What physical traits, what physical actions does he do to give over the blessings? Exactly, Susan. He literally takes his hands and places it on their heads, on their heads. What's so significant about that? Okay, it's a nice, it's become the expression of conferring something, right? But where do you see that in actuality? Where's another story in the Torah of someone placing their hand on someone else's head as a means of conferring to the next generation? I'll give you a hint. When people spend time in yeshiva and they want to earn their rabbinic degree, right? They want to get in Hebrew to have rabbinical ordination is what they call it. In Hebrew, it's called smicha. Smicha. It's a funny word. What does the word smicha actually mean? It does not mean rabbinic ordination. Boy, we got to get the rust off. I give you 2 weeks off and yay. The word smicha comes from the word samoch, which means to be right next to literally confer from A to B, from rabbi to student. It's a tradition passed down. When you are close to somebody physically, you are able to confer. I love the fact that we have technology today. If I want your number or I want a contact that you have and you're right next to me, you take your iPhone, I take my iPhone, and just literally put them next to each other. And guess what happens?
They talk to each other.
It confirms, it transfers from phone A to phone B. You don't even have to type anything. You just pull up the contact, put them next to each other, and they magically get it gets transferred. Smicha is literally the teacher is conferring on the student. Who was the first one to give smicha to his student?
Abraham?
Moses. Amen.
Who said
Moses.
Moses?
Me, Sid.
Yeah, Sid, you're right. When Moshe gave over his mantle of leadership to Joshua, to Yoshua, the Torah says he placed his hand on Yoshua's head. When we have the custom, many of us have the custom to bless our kids Friday night at the Shabbat meal, don't you put your hands on their head? Right? We are doing that. That's this concept. Because when Yaakov was placing his hands on their head, it was a transmission from iPhone to iPhone. He was giving it over. Perhaps Rav Soloveitchik suggests that's the reason why the Jewish people are called after Yaakov and Yisrael, because he created the community, ensuring the continuity of the Jewish people, of bridging the chasm over the generations, not just parent to child, but making sure that it's parent to grandchild, grandparent to grandchild. That is the three-ply cord. When you have a string, you can break it relatively easily. Two-ply, it's a little more difficult. A three-ply threads that are strings that are put together, it actually has another name. It's called a rope. It's much stronger. When you can go ahead and have the relationship of grandparent to grandchild, that is the continuity and survival of the Jewish people. Hence, when we are referring to ourselves as the Jewish people, the patriarch we choose to associate with is the one who guaranteed its success, making sure that you had the relationship with the third generation. The other patriarchs, they were patriarchal families, but Yaakov was the foundation of a nation. That's what Rav Soloveitchik suggests, and it really struck me. It really struck me because there's so much about this. I'll show you another case. Of the 12 sons of Yaakov, we know that Yosef died the first. He died the youngest. Even though he was one of the younger brothers, he was the first to go. Who was the last? Which of the 12 sons lived the longest?
Levy.
Levi is correct. Child number three from Leah, Levi, from whom the Kohanim and the Levites come from. Why is that so significant? The Torah actually points it out. Why? So one of the commentaries on the Torah makes this observation, and he says, who are the great-grandchildren of Levi? Famous, famous, famous three. Come on, who comes from Levi, folks?
Joshua,
No.
Aaron, Aaron and
oh,
the
I mean,
priest.
Aaron, sorry.
Yeah. Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, brothers and sisters. The three great leaders of the Jewish people in that 40-year sojourn in the desert. They are the three. Yeah. Pinchas played a role, and Yisro played a role. Yeah, they played a role. Others played roles. The guy who jumped into the sea, Nachshon, I'm not taking anything away from him. But if you want to know who were the three leaders for the Jewish people,
Couldn't get
it
our
was the
picture.
two brothers and sister, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. What, asks this commentary, what was in their water that they merited to have such leadership in that family? And this commentary says, because they were able to have a relationship with their Alta Zayda, Levi. Levi lived long enough that he had a direct relationship with the little kids, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. And that had a tremendous impact on them. We, and I'm speaking to all of us, because all of us, for the most part, are in that category of where we have relationships with our children and, God willing, with our grandchildren. We're not on the receiving end anymore. This is on us. We have to do what it takes to have that relationship. In fact, the entire Torah, if someone were to ask me, what is the Torah? I would not say Torah is a book of information. That's not what I would say. I would say Torah is a transmission of values. That's what the Torah is. Yeah, it has information. But that's not its essence. Its essence is the transmission of values to the next generation. The verse, when it talks about, there are six things. I'll give you a chance to digest this. But there are six things that we are asked to remember every single day. Do you know that? They're known as the Sheish Zechirot, the six remembrances. It's usually found in your siddur, right after the morning prayers. In many siddurim, it's found there. There are six of them that we are told to remember. One is remember of the Exodus from Egypt. We are required to remember it every day. For most of us, that's easy. If we say the Shema, we make mention of the Exodus as part of the third paragraph. So that's number one. Remember the Exodus from Egypt. Number two, remember receiving the Torah at Mount Sinai. It's something that we need to remember every day. Number three, remember the attack of Amalek against us as we left Egypt. Can never forget, not just before Purim. We need to remember it every day. Number four, remember the terrible sin of the golden calf, right? Where that put us in a serious predicament. I'll leave it at that. Number five, remember Miriam. Remember the fact that she spoke against her brother, Moshe, and she was struck with what's called tzaras. They translate it as leprosy, but she was struck with it, and the entire nation waited for her until she got better. Remember what Hashem did to Miriam. And number six, the one you all know, what are you supposed to remember every single day? When you go to the store on, I don't care, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and you want to buy something that's really, really good, You save it for
Shabbat. Shabbat.
Shabbos, Shabbat. You need to remember Shabbos every day. In fact, I think I mentioned this. There are no days of the week names. There are no names to the week. I know we call it Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, but that's not a Jewish thing. You know why it's called Sunday? Because they gave homage to the sun. And you know why it's called Monday? Because they gave respect and honor to the moon. Tuesday is for Zeus. It was called Zeus Day. And it kept down. Right. So that's not a Jewish thing. If you were to look in your Siddur, and there's the psalm that we say for every day, it's a different one each day. It doesn't say today is Sunday, therefore we say this. It says Hayom Yom Rishon LeShabbat. Today is the first day towards Shabbos. And on Monday, we say Hayom Yom Yom Sheni LeShabbat. Today is day two. There are no names. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Shabbos. So remember the Shabbos. So those are your six things. When it comes to this one of remembering what the Sinai experience, I'm going to read it to you what it says. Beware and guard yourself carefully, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they stray from your heart all the days of your life. And you are to make them known to your children and your children's children, the day you stood before Hashem your God at Sinai. Do you hear that? It does not say that you need to remember and make sure that your children know this. Part and parcel of the Sinai experience of us getting the Torah is that we make in and we ensure that it is to our children and our children's children. That's part and parcel of it. In fact, without getting too far afield here, the Midrash tells us that when God was offering us the Torah, he says, I'm giving you my most prized possession. I want a guarantor. Listen, if you went for, when you went to the bank to get your mortgage, they asked for some guarantor. You know, my young couple, one of my kids, right? So they're in an apartment complex and they don't have much income. So the leasing agent said, I have to co-sign that rental agreement. You know, because Daddy Warbucks here, I got no problem. If they default on it, I got it. Sure. Right? So, but you need a guarantor. So Hashem says the same thing. I'm giving you my Torah. I'm giving you the greatest gift. I want a guarantor. Who's gonna make sure that it's still good? So the Jewish people, according to the Medrash, turn to God and they say, our matriarchs and patriarchs. And God says, nope, not good enough. They say, okay, how about all of the leaders and prophets over the course of hundreds of years? The great leadership of the Jewish people. God says, nope, not good enough. And finally, the Jewish people say, how about our children and our future generations? God says, ah, now you got a deal. The children and the future generations are the guarantors of why we have the Torah. That is what is incumbent upon us to make sure that Torah is not just information, it's a transmission of values. Okay. I once saw there's a verse in, I think it's in Proverbs. It says, Ateret zikenim b'nei banim. The crown of being older are grandchildren. The crown of being elder. Of zakenim, right? Being a zakain, our grandchildren. Why? Why not your children? I mean, thank God we're proud of our children, despite all of their warts, right? But we are proud of them. What? Why is it not the crown of older years are your children? Why is it specifically the grandchildren? So here's what I read once, and I was so amazed. I literally wrote it on the back of some paper that I had. I have never transcribed it into a normal place. That piece of paper is still stuck in my folder. I know exactly what it looks like in my head, and I'm not going to rewrite it because I know exactly where and what it says. This rabbi made the following point. He said, the fact that children follow what their parents ask them to do, even older children, is not proof that they are on board with it. They may be doing it out of respect for the parents. If this is something meaningful to my mother, if this is something meaningful to my father, I don't particularly go for it, but out of respect for them, I'll continue to do it. You know what the real proof that they do respect and they're doing it because they themselves are on board with it? When they teach it to their children. Because then it's not out of respect for the parent. It's because they are on board with it. The true crown of the work that we do is when we see it not in our own children, but in their children. If they're passing down what was important to me, what was important to us, that means they incorporated it and they're passing it down. Because we don't pass down things that we don't believe in. We don't. We may do it out of respect for the parent, but we don't necessarily pass it down. Okay. There's so much more. How do we do this? How can we go ahead? I've laid out the importance of it. I've even started with telling you how challenging it is to be able to how to close the chasm, to close the gap between the generations because, I remember many a conversation I would share with my grandparents, and I asked them once, I said, you live through a time of where the space travel, you landed on the moon. Landed on the moon. How did that feel? And the inventions of phones, forget cell phones, just phones, being able to go places with cars. It's a different planet. And our children, let alone our grandchildren, think we lived at the time of the dinosaurs. We're so far behind. I mean, I just this week I had to upgrade my phone. I got to a point of where it wasn't working. So who did I ask? I don't know what phone to get. So I asked the kids. Of course, they know much better. And they gave me the whole laydown. Get this iPhone, get that I don't get this one. I make sure it has this and don't forget that. All right. Okay. I said, now what? They said, go on your phone and order it. I said, I don't know how to do that. I said, just go to your T-Mobile app and order the. Okay. It's a different world. So how do we do it? So let's go back to another story. The story of Avraham and Yitzchak. Avram and Yitzchak, what are they most famous for? The Akedah. A very hard story, but the binding of Isaac. I'm not going to focus on what actually happened, but I'd rather focus on how'd they get there? What does it say? I'm going to read you the text. Yeah, I got the off. So Abraham woke up early in the morning and he saddled his donkey. He took his two young men with him and Isaac, his son. He split the wood for the offering and stood up and went to the place of which God had spoken to him. On the third day, here we go, folks. On the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and perceived the place from afar. And Abraham said to his young men, stay here by yourselves with the donkey while I and the lad will go yonder. We will worship and we will return to you. And Avram took the wood for the offering, placed it on Isaac, his son. He took in his hand the fire and the knife, and the two of them went together. Okay, I'm putting an emphasis on it. You'll see why. Okay, it makes sense because they went together. It was just the two of them. The young lad and Eliezer and Yishmael, they stayed back with all the equipment. Okay? So I understand the Torah says they went together. This is the end of verse number 6. Here's verse 7. Then Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, Father, and he said, here I am, my son. He said, here are the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the offering? And Abraham said, God will seek out for himself the lamb for the offering, my son. And here at the end of verse 8, and the two of them went together. Did I not just say that two verses ago?
Yeah.
At the end of verse 6, It says, Abraham took the wood for the offering, placed it on Isaac, his son, and took in his hand the fire and the knife, and the two of them went together. End of verse 6. End of verse 8, Abraham said, God will seek out for himself the lamb for the offering, my son, and the two of them went together. You just said that. What is being added here? You hear my question? Nothing transpired in between verse 6 and verse 8 other than a conversation. Of course, they're still walking together. No, all of a sudden, I don't know, a genie appeared and everything. No, that they went together. What is being added here? So the many, many sources tell us that when Avraham said, I've got everything I need, the two of them went together. What was going through Avram's mind and what's going through Yitzchak's mind? Through Avram's mind, he knows exactly what this journey is all about. He was told by God he needs to bring his son as an offering. And so they're walking together. Avraham knowing full well, and Yitzchak not yet, no, realizing what's going on. So Yitzchak asks, that's verse 7, Yitzchak asks, Dad, I see everything except the offering. What's up with that? Verse 8, Avraham shares with Yitzchak a hinted way, but you're the offering, buddy. And what is Yitzchak's response? What does the Torah tell us?
That he accepts that.
And they walked together.
He still trusts him.
100%. You see, beforehand, Yitzchak trusted Avram because it's his father. And if dad says we're going somewhere, I trust you, dad. But now that Yitzchak's been told an amazing piece of information that had it been Zvi Tachman talking to his father and he heard, oh, by the way, it's your neck on the line, you know where Zvi Tachman would have gone? Ba-ching! The other direction. Nope. Yitzchak says, oh, okay, I trust. I walk hand in hand, lockstep with you, Dad. We walk together. Why does Yitzchak feel so close to accept that after hearing this? Because of this general idea. A child trusts and believes a parent only when it's with deep, abiding conviction on behalf of the parent. I'll say it in plain, simple terms. You can say all you want to your child, but if you're not living it, if you're just giving lip service to the value, the child picks up on it very quickly and doesn't buy into it. Do as I say, not as I do, worst expression ever. Yitzchak hears from Avraham 100% faith in God that there's a plan. And even though Yitzchak is informed of this piece of information, Yitzchak says, I know my dad is 100% on board with his faith and trust in Hashem. I trust in my father. And hence, they walk together. If you listen to a story, and then I'll show you a contrast. Listen to an amazing story. The courtroom was heavy with dread for the accused. Mountains of evidence hung over his head as his unfortunate defending attorney was about to make his closing remarks. It was the 11th hour. He boldly claimed that he had hard evidence that would clearly demonstrate that his client was in fact innocent. He stated that in precisely 1 minute, the murder victim himself would enter the large oak doors in the back of the courtroom. In a state of shock, everyone present stared for a full minute at the doors, and after the last second lapsed, refocused their attention on the defending attorney. With the genius of a desperate man, he pointed out that in order to convict, the jury had to be certain beyond a shadow of a doubt. Well, since everyone in the courtroom, including the members of the jury, had stared, awaiting the entrance of the victim himself, then they must harbor a shadow of a doubt, and therefore must find the accused man innocent. He brilliantly rested his case. The jury deliberated for 10 minutes, and returned the decision, finding the accused guilty. The lawyer was aghast. He quickly put his papers together and buttonholed a juror in the parking lot, begging for an explanation. The juror told him that his summary statement was so clever that for the first 9 minutes of deliberation, they were prepared to acquit his client. But in the last minute, it all changed. One of the jurors admitted allowing his eye to wander during that pregnant minute when all were awaiting the victim, presumed dead, to walk into the courtroom. In that moment, he noticed that the one person in the courtroom who was not studying the large oak doors in the back of the room was his client, the accused man. If the accused himself does not believe the claim, then no matter whatever expression, whatever argument can be made, it's not going to be believable. If we want the children, the grandchildren, to believe in something that's important to us, then we have to have conviction towards it. If the guy who's sitting there, accused of murder, knows that the argument of the defense attorney, that the victim is going to walk through the door, he doesn't even bother looking because he knows it's false, then what's the jury supposed to say? And therefore, he's guilty. We have to have that kind of conviction. I'll show you the contrast. Everybody knows the famous story of Avraham when he's a young child and he's put in charge of his father's idol store, right? His father, Terach, owned an idol store. Yeah, we all teach this to the kids, right? And he leaves Avram in charge. And sure enough, he goes out for an hour and he comes back and he sees all the idols smashed except for the big one with a hammer in his hand. You know the story, right? And Terach says to Avram, "Whoa, what happened here?" He says, "Don't look at me. I tried to stop him, but that big idol, he just got angry and he knocked down all the other idols and smashed them to bits." And Terach looks at Avram and says, "What are you talking about? That's the most ludicrous thing ever. He can't, an idol is stone, he's wood. He can't do these kind of things. That's crazy." And of course, Avram looked at him and says, "Do you hear your own words? Right? You're telling me I need to believe in idols and I need to believe in this and I need to believe in this. And yet you yourself, you don't buy it. I just showed it to you." Avraham says, "If you don't have that kind of conviction, you expect me to have it?" And he looks elsewhere and he finds God. That's the contrast. If we want to know what is going to be the way to close out this generation gap, is if we have the conviction towards it and it's meaningful and it's real, not just with lip service, but in action, in practice. I say this to you all the time, and I'm so proud that you do it. You are off limits to everybody else from 8 to 9 on Wednesday night, unless, okay, circumstances are what they are. It makes a statement. Okay, from 3 to 4, right? That's for you, Sharon, right? It makes a statement that this is something important to you. I'm not just saying, oh, it's important to be in touch with your Judaism. It's important that maybe we should study that. I do it. That's your statement. You have your conviction. That's how you do it. And the children see it, and the grandchildren especially see it. That's how it works. What's even more fascinating is what is it we're trying to transmit? We're trying to transmit Torah. You know what's amazing about the Torah? I mean, I can go on and on, but what's most amazing about the Torah is that it's eternal. That means to say it has no physical property. Yeah, I know we have a scroll, but the words of the Torah, the messages of the Torah are eternal. They're timeless. Well, if I want to know what's the antidote to the one issue in a generation gap, which is all about time, because we are the past, the parents are maybe the present, and the children are the future, how are you supposed to go get through that difficult time period? Everyone's in a different time slot. Oh, I found something that's a common language. It's called Torah. Because Torah is past, present, and future. It's timeless. It's a common language we share. When we sit and we talk about at the Seder on Pesach night, it's not just telling a story of what was once upon a time. The job of us at the Seder is to convey that it is relevant today. We face the challenge of being enslaved, whether it's to our jobs, to our lusts, to our whatever. We are enslaved. And what does the Torah tell us? That God gives us the ability to become unslaved, to become free. When do we become free? When He gives us a Torah. We leave it, we break the shackles of being enslaved, and we're given a book that allows us to soar. Torah is timeless. It is the perfect thing. It's the perfect item to bridge all time. That's why it's the perfect common language that we have with our children and our grandchildren. So where does that leave us? It leaves us with understanding now with the question we started with. And that is, why? What is the deeper meaning of what Yaakov does when he blesses his grandchildren, Ephraim and Manasseh? He's the first patriarch to have that kind of relationship directly. The blessing of the grandkids is transformed when Yaakov does it from a purely personal story to a national and eternal paradigm for what we need to do. When we bless our children at the table Friday night, and now Baruch Hashem, every now and then when my grandkids are over on Friday night, my kids say, "Do you want a bracha from Zadie?" And they're like, "Yeah, it's the best." I mean, I love it personally, but it conveys a message that my father and mother aren't just making this stuff up. It came from their father and mother. That's us. Special relationship between grandparents and grandkids. Jokingly, they say, you know why they get along so great is because they have a common enemy. The parents, right? But that's more of a joke than anything else. But the truth is, there's less tension because the grandparents see an extension of themselves beyond their lifetime. Children, okay, it's somewhat of an extension. But God willing, you see it in the next generation, even further. Then you know that you've done your job. And this is what Yaakov says to his grandchildren. I did my part. I taught my children. And Yosef, he did his part by teaching you, Ephraim and Manasseh. Now it's up to you guys. Now it's on you. If you do it, if you continue it, the Jewish future is assured. It's guaranteed. Building a three-generation rope is the key to Jewish survival. This is the message that Yaakov is conveying to his grandchildren. It's something that some of us who are blessed with it. It's not something to be taken lightly. But even if you're not technically a grandparent, you are of that age that you can teach this. You can have a relationship with the grandchildren age. I love in my wife's work, she works rehab. She does rehab. One of the things that's always so powerful in general, in the hospital, are intergenerational activities. It's so powerful of where you have grandparents, not their own grandchildren, but younger generation who interact with the older generation. It is so beneficial for the younger ones, and I would dare say, even more beneficial for the older generation. It doesn't work from parent to child. That one generation, there's too much tension, there's too much friction because it's the contrast is so. But when it comes to grandparents, or the I'll call it the grandparent age and the grandchildren age, those two bookends of the generations, it works magnificently. There's so many studies about the intergenerational. I'll leave you with this. Rabbi Wein, who I love to quote also, he quoted one of his teachers. He didn't say who, he didn't say at what grade he heard it, but he said, I had a teacher who defined success in life with the following. This is the quote. Success in life. If the grandparents and the grandchildren are both proud of you and your accomplishments, that's success in life. It's such a profound statement. If the grandparents can take pride in their child and the grandchildren are taking pride in their parents, meaning the middle sandwich generation, if both the grandparents and the grandchildren recognize the value, that's success. You've done your job of connecting the grandparents and the grandchildren. That's the ultimate success. And this is what Yaakov does when he blesses Ephraim and Manasseh. And it's the reason why, to this day, when we bless our children, we use that formula. That is the beauty of what goes on in this. I'm going to leave it at that. There's more to say, but we'll leave it at this. Let me, questions, thoughts, ideas. Yes, Muriel.
Where does the priestly blessing fit into this scenario? Where
It's
does that come from? Is it before? Is it after?
after the priestly blessings are really, it's really a sidebar. Hashem loves and wants to interact with the Jewish people, and he wants to give them blessings. The medium by which he does that is what we call the priestly blessings. I want to be careful. There are those that are under the, I think, not I think, they are under the misunderstanding. They are wrong in thinking that it is the Kohanim, the priests, who are giving the blessings. That is 100% incorrect. It is God's blessings coming through the Kohanim. They are nothing more than the mouthpiece. They are nothing more than the messengers to bring the blessings of God to the people. They are in no position to give any blessings. It's God's blessings. That, Muriel, is the prototype of God blessing the people. That's like the ultimate. So when we bless our children, besides wishing them well, we tack on the ultimate blessing that God should bless them through what we call the priestly blessings.
So the parent is acting as the conduit, the sending the
Exactly.
priestess.
Exactly. 100%. It's not for now, but it's interesting. I happen to have, my father did not, my parents did not have the custom of blessing the children. And I asked my father after I had a child if it's okay if I take on that custom. I felt it was only appropriate, asked respectfully. It's on, and my father and my mother were like 100%, we're totally cool with it. It just wasn't our custom. So fine. In discussing it, one of the things that I do differently than I think most people is that when I put my hand on the child who I'm giving the blessing to Friday night, I only use one hand. I don't use both hands. And the reason being is that I don't want it to be misconstrued as if I am like the priest. I'm the Kohen. The Kohen is the only one who can go ahead and bring about the priestly blessings in that classic format. And he does it with two hands. So I only use one so that it not look as if I'm a Kohen. But I still say the same words. It's more of a side point. But absolutely, it's a way of conveying a blessing as the conduit to the children that God should bless them.
Thank you.
Susan, is that a follow-up to this? Or separate?
It is about blessing. No, it's a different
Go
question.
ahead.
It's
Go ahead.
about Yaakov changing hands with Ephraim and Manasseh for the blessing. How we to and what do we know about the re what was it in Ephraim? or what was Yaakov's thing? Like, what do we know about that? If
Well, on the simple level, I mentioned that Yaakov already had a vision that the great leadership going forward in the Jewish people would come from the line of Ephraim and not Manasseh.
How, where is that written? It, how do we know that he had that vision? That's what
Are
I'm
you
asking.
questioning me?
Yes.
Good. Rashi actually quotes it from an early source.
Okay.
Let me
Okay.
see. Let me see what Rashi's quote is. Hold on. In this Chumash, he doesn't say, but Rashi's words are that the older one, he too will become great. Ulam, however, the younger brother will be greater than him, says Rashi, She'atid Yehoshua latzeit mimenu, because Joshua was destined to come from him. Sheyanchil et ha'aretz, that he will conquer the land, v'yilamed Torah liYisrael, and teach Torah to the Jewish people. Where is that from? So let me see if the other Chumash has it. But Rashi is quoting. Rashi almost never cites his own opinion. He usually cites a source. Let me see if I can find it quickly. This is Pesach Yud Tes.
Rabbi, while you're looking, I heard of another reason also, if I could say.
It's the Talmud and the Midrash. They both have it. The Talmud in Tractate of Avodah Zarah and the Midrash here in the Book of Bereishit. Yes, Robin, what?
Just in answer to that, I don't know where I read this, but that the other thing that I learned about the reason why was that the younger one was Ephraim, right? Was the younger one? Yeah. That he had studied directly with Jacob the Torah, while Manasseh, if I'm not saying it right, Manasseh was the one that worked with
Yosef.
Joseph to like lead the country and was
That is
part of
correct.
Jacob.
That is true. That is also true. Do you know what's one other fascinating insight, which could have been its own class? Why is it to this day that we bless our kids like Ephraim and Manasseh? Why don't we bless them to be like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Aren't they the patriarchs? I get it. I understand why Yaakov blessed them, like we just spoke about, the idea of grandchildren, right? But why do we? Why has this become the formula? So many answers, but one of them, my favorite, is that this
You're
is the
in the
first time in
same
history.
place.
First time. What? Michelle, you got it?
I was gonna say we're in the same situation. We are immersed in other cultures, and we're trying to hold on to who we are, and they were able to do that in the worst
Excellent.
kind of
That's
situation.
one of my two favorite answers, and that is
Leo and was that they didn't fall out. They kept friends. They didn't dispute with each other.
great. Those are the two answers. Meaning, let's just explain that. Number one is that this is really the first time that a family grew up in a foreign culture. Avraham was in, as a young child and even as an adult, but once he came to Israel and he became Avraham, he was mostly in Israel. There were times that he had to leave. Yitzchak never left Israel. Yaakov is the first patriarch to spend a significant amount of time away from Israel. And Yosef, who went down to Egypt as a 17-year-old boy, raised his family in a culture that was the antithesis of these values. And yet, Ephraim and Manasseh came out strong. That's the bracha. We live in a foreign country. We live in a place that the values do not necessarily align with ours. We bless our children to be strong enough to go and stick with the program. Be true. Be strong with your Jewish values despite the culture. That's one answer. The other is Monroe saying, and that is this the first time in history that you have siblings who got along. Hey, Avraham's children, Yitzhak and Yishmael, they were at odds. Yaakov's children, Esav and Yaakov, Yitzchak's children, Yaakov and Esav, they're certainly all right. And even the brothers, they took it out against Yosef. Ephraim and Manasseh, despite adding all these pieces together, despite Menashe being the one working in the palace with Joseph, and Yosef having and Ephraim having the luxury of being able to learn Torah with Yaakov, there could have been some slight. And then when it comes time to the blessing, and Yaakov switches his hands and puts Ephraim ahead of him, you don't find Menashe upset. You don't find Ephraim digging it into him. They got along. And therefore, we bless our children that they should get along. Those are two of my favorite answers. Sharon.
Just a little sidebar. When you talked about the conviction, I was sitting here this afternoon going, "Oh, it's Wednesday. I have class." It wasn't a question of, "Oh, it's 3 o'clock in the morning," or it's this. It's like, it's Wednesday, and I have a commitment that to come be at class, and I
You're a
actually.
better person than me, because when I was in Israel, I blew you all off.
It's like I just decided, like, oh, it was like 11. I went to bed and I thought, if I wake up, I wake up. If not, and at 5 minutes to three, I woke up
You go.
and came
Well,
downstairs.
I appreciate it. It does. I think it's so meaningful, not just because it's my class, but I think, and I've shared this, it makes a statement. This is a priority for you. And that is the greatest conviction. I mean, this is what you want. And you
Right.
structure your day and you figure it out. And yeah, every now and then there's a conflict. I get it. But this is it's not just lip service. It's real.
So, and one other thing is, like, I followed in your footsteps or whatever, and one of the days I was here, my granddaughter was off for from the army on that last weekend, and she took me and we went for the entire day down south, and it such an amazing emotional just
I
going
want to hear
around
about
and
it when you
seeing,
come back. I want to hear your
and
impressions of
right, and did some things that you, in addition to what you did, so
Yeah.
it's quite moving.
Thank you. That's great. Any other thoughts? We're good? Okay.
Very cool.
Fabulous.
Rabbi, I'm
All
just gonna say
right.
next week I will be from the West Coast joining you.
Ah, it's easier. Ah,
Well,
you'll
it's
be
3 hours.
seamless.
I'll be in
And
Vegas
2 hours.
visiting. I'll be in Ve 3 hours. I'll be in Vegas visiting my son, so I'll
Good.
be on from
Please
Vegas.
send Daniel my warmest
I will.
regards.
Thank you.
Fabulous. All
Okay.
right, everybody. Have a
Thank
great
you.
rest
Have
of
a
your week.
great. Thank
And
you.
I'll
Thank
see you next
you.
week.
Thank you.
Thank you so